This month at PostWrestlingCafe.com, go XL and you get live editions of Rewind to Raw, Rewind to Dynamite, and Rewind to SmackDown, featuring all the news of the day, your questions and answers, as well as feedback. PostWrestlingCafe.com, $6 gets you in the door.
Hello and welcome everybody to Post Wrestling's Elimination Chamber 2025 review. My name is Wei Tang. I'm here in the captain's seat because John Pollock is enjoying a much-deserved vacation, so we wish him all the best. But in his place, we have a great, great, great roster of post-wrestling affiliates and co-hosts to join me. And we got the big guns tonight here. Brother Nate Milton of the NWA podcast, Nefarious Media. How you doing, Nate?
I'm doing well, Wei Tang. Always a good time to catch up with you, brother. I know, you know, when you reached out and asked if I'd be available, you know, you asked a lot of things of me. You asked of my time, you know, you asked of my talent, and you asked for my soul. And I said, I can give you two of those three things, Wei. I can give you my time, and I can give you my talent. But I gave my soul to the people in these microphones a long time ago, brother.
Yeah, and then you proceeded to tell me to go fuck myself.
Yes, yeah, we edited that part out of the podcast.
Yeah, that's all right. That's all right. You made it anyway. Thank you very much. Much appreciated to have you here. We know you're very busy, of course. So we will we have a lot to get to, and boy, yes. am I looking forward to the host of the Rocky Maivia picture himself to be able to talk about maybe the one of the biggest pieces of cinema we've seen from Dwayne and John Cena. Coming up a little bit later. Of course, this is a free podcast available for everybody, but we remind you, as part of the Post Wrestling Network, we do extended editions of our Raw, Dynamite, and SmackDown reviews every single Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, and those include a news discussion off the top of the day, as well as feedback and questions. So I think for this particular show, we'll probably do feedback at the end of all of this as well for everybody, just to give everybody a you know, a good slice of what's out there. There are a lot of people who probably went to the event that listened to these shows, so we invite you guys to leave your feedback if you're a Post Wrestling Cafe patron at forum.postwrestling.com. It is free to sign up, but if you want to leave some feedback, that is a cafe members only perk. So. Nate, haven't really had a chance to talk to you about like WWE in quite a while. What was your anticipation level for Elimination Chamber?
I would say I had high expectations for the Chamber matches and for Sammy and KO. You know, I thought the Nia, Trish, Tiffany, Candice match was, you know, fun, a fun little treat. But overall, I was like, you know, this is going to get us on that road to WrestleMania, gonna kick us into high gear. So my day started. I was excited, Wade, because I knew you and I were gonna talk about this tonight. But here's how crazy my life is sometimes. So my knee, you know, I'm not a spring chicken. I'm up there. I'm up there in the John Cena age range now, Wei Tang. And so, you know, sometimes your knees don't work the way they're supposed to. So I've been taking Advil to, you know, kind of help me out when I go to work. I also have Advil PM, which, you know, kind of helps me go to sleep. And I had both of those bottles positioned next to each other on the nightstand. And so I woke up this morning, my knee was feeling a little creaky, like, you know, let me pop a couple Advil, take a hot shower and be good with it. Pop the Advil, take a hot shower, come back, sit down on the bed. And something like my brain finally clicks in. It's like, oh, my boy, you took the PM and it's the AM. And so I spent all day way fighting this drowsiness. But after watching this show, particularly the last 5 minutes, I feel like I'm energized right now, brother.
You did the AM/PM mistake that people usually do when it comes to alarm clocks, but you did it with Advil.
With Advil, which I would not recommend.
Oh my. Okay. Well, hopefully the show was enough to wake you up. If not, I hope this podcast was enough to wake you up. We are here to talk about, a lot of wrestling. We're here to talk about souls as well. And, boy, did we see a soul get taken tonight. But let's start things off here from the top here. This is the Elimination Chamber, of course, from the Rogers Center in Toronto, Ontario. 35,298 tickets out as of this afternoon, according to WrestleTix. The official number from the WWE during the broadcast says 38,493. Now, of course, this is far from the capacity that the Rogers Center holds and what they've the company has previously achieved for WrestleMania 6 and 18. But this is definitely the highest priced event that they've ever held in the Rogers Center. Didn't really get word about how much money, what records were broken on the broadcast itself, but I don't. Are they doing a press conference? I didn't even see them.
Because right after I clicked it, I was getting ready to turn it off, and then they're like, "Stay tuned, because here comes the press conference." And okay. I'm like, "I gotta go talk to Wei Ting. I'll catch you up later."
So chat room, just kind of, you know, keep us updated on maybe some of those notes that might be out there. I'm assuming they might announce some of that stuff. So we'll find out how many Canadian dollars were exchanged, tariffed or not. I'm not really sure. Mm. But speaking of perhaps Canada-U.S. relations, before the broadcast, some clips surfaced out there of the U.S. anthem getting loudly booed. Pat McAfee did make mention of this during his introduction on the broadcast itself. So this, is, of course, follows a trend that we've seen, you know, at hockey events and really just kind of a number of sporting events. One that I think was at least speculated upon, if not expected, if the anthem were to be played in front of a professional wrestling audience that is very much used to booing and voicing their displeasure or just thoughts about, you know, things via booing. As an American, Nate, how did you feel about this? Did you have any sort of like thoughts or opinions?
I felt about that the same way Sam Wilson, star of the number one movie in the world right now, Way, felt when Zemo said Trouble Man was the perfect encapsulation of the black experience. Like, hey, you out of line, but you're not wrong. Like, let's be real, like, not to get political, but America is closer to being a heel than a babyface right now. And it's not the fault of the citizens. And I'll leave it at that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, speaking as, I guess, the Canadian on the podcast, I think it should be understood pretty clear that it's not necessarily the country we're booing. It is the administration and the threats from the administration that the city is booing. So it's certainly a topical, you know, event that's going on that it's funny because, like, sometimes the anthems make their way into the broadcast. They did not for this one. And I almost kind of wish that it had, because I kind of love, like, the sort of like current events feelings of these sort of like capsules. So whatever, it's out there in social media and it is a talking point from this particular show. Some of the celebrities that were in attendance here included Lil Yachty, Nav, and Drake, Drizzy himself, Six God himself, making it out here, showing his face in public here, arriving right before Sami Zayn versus Kevin Owens, sitting right behind Michael Cole, and you could see on one of the on cameras. Now, interestingly, as far as I know, they did not identify him through a cutaway.
No, I don't believe so. Like, I know they mentioned the celebrities you mentioned. They mentioned Robbie Amell, Robbie Amell's wife,
Andrew Fung.
Yep, my man from Kim's Convenience. But, like, yeah, there was no mention of the 69 guy on these streets, Wei Ting.
Yes, yes. I'm being alerted that the anthems actually did play on the Peacock stream. So maybe I just happened to miss it myself. Anyway, so apologies for that. Awesome that it's out there. Look for it yourself. Let's start things off here with the Women's Elimination Chamber. Naomi and Liv start things off here, and the big event, well, the other big event coming out of the show is, before the match begins, Jade Cargill's music hits, and immediately she makes a beeline for the cage. Liv acts scared, of course, but Jade instead comes in and attacks Naomi. She just goes on to destroy her and sends her repeatedly through the bulletproof plexiglass of the chamber pods, delivers a big jumping kick to Naomi through one of the chambers. And this time, Bianca Belair is just locked inside her chamber, yelling and crying hysterically the whole time. Naomi crawls out of the cage and Jade slams the door into her before leaving. This, of course, eliminates Naomi from the match and at least tells us, at least from Jade's perspective, who she thinks her attacker is. Your thoughts on the big angle to start this match?
I thought it was well done. Like, Jade came out and they used her effectively. I thought the beatdown looked vicious, you know, particularly that, you know, ode to the Freebirds, Von Erichs with the, you know, cage spot at the end. And I loved Bianca's selling of this moment, as you mentioned, where it's like, you know, like her two besties, you know, we the big three and they're fighting each other and Jade is just, you know, brutalizing her friend. And so, you know, we talked about this all the time on the NWA podcast. Like, yeah, like the simplest route for this storyline was always Naomi was the person that attacked Jade Cargill. The question now is, was Bianca an accomplice in that, or is Bianca now caught between her two friends? And I think for the short term, Bianca's going to be in that role in between the two friends. I'd be interested, though, Way, to see if they pull the trigger and, like, turn both Bianca and Naomi. because I think that could be fascinating.
I thought it was really excellently done the way this was. I mean, I don't think, like you said, it doesn't completely reveal the storyline yet. So I don't even, I mean, I think at this point, maybe we could safely say Naomi was definitely involved, but it's not definite, you know. Could Jade be mistaken somehow? Did somebody frame Naomi? That's not completely out of the question. There's still a lot to be revealed. Was Bianca Belair attached to it as well? In either case, we had a major storyline event to kick off this match. And what do you think at this point the Mania direction is, if you had to take a guess at this point?
I mean, I would say Bianca, not Bianca, because Bianca's got Rhea on her hands. Sorry, EO. We know how that's going to play out on Monday night. But I feel like you got Naomi and Jade. I like it, Way, but it almost feels like I might hold off on that until after Mania. Because Mania is going to be so packed, and I think that's a good feud, but it's not a Mania-level feud, and I don't think they have enough time to make it into a Mania-level feud, and I'd rather it be after Mania where it can get its own kind of platform than getting lost in the shuffle over those two nights.
Yeah. Well, spoiler alert, Bianca Belair wins this one. So she's advancing. And I have to imagine Jade will somehow still be involved, attached to all of that as well. So we shall see. Let's go to the actual match itself. So it starts off here now with Belair and Liv. And Belair, she's coming out. She's still hysterical about what she just watched. So Belair immediately wants to leave the match to check on Naomi. But with the door locked, Liv attacks her and drags her back into the match, after which she becomes a pretty active participant. The third person in the ring is Roxanne Perez, followed by Bayley and then Alexa Bliss. And then no eliminations until everybody's in the ring. But the first one comes as Bayley is distracted by Roxanne. When Liv comes in, hits the Oblivion and eliminates Bayley, Belair then chases Liv on top of the chamber. She uses her hair to whip Liv back down, creating a huge smack and a huge welt onto Liv's stomach, then delivers a high cross off the chamber onto her. Roxanne is next to be eliminated when she eats a Codebreaker, followed by a Twisted Bliss. Alexa then hits the Sister Abigail DDT to Belair, but gets rolled up by Liv in the immediate aftermath, so Liv eliminates Alexa. Belair and Liv are your final two. And at this point, Liv uses Belair's braid to basically yo-yo her between the rope and the fence. Belair comes back hitting a 450, but Liv gets her knees up. Belair avoids Oblivion, but Morgan avoids the KOD and then hits the Codebreaker. Belair again avoids the Oblivion and then hits the KOD to get the victory. So we have Bianca Belair versus Rhea Ripley at WrestleMania. Your thoughts on the Elimination Chamber match itself as well as the result?
I thought it was a good opener. Like, I think that, you know, this match serves many different purposes. You know, obviously you talked about continuing the Jade Cargill story. Like, we've got that part of the story. I think Roxanne Perez, like, this was a very good outing for Roxanne. And maybe for a lot of folks, this is the first real chance they've had to see her. Like, you know, she did her thing in the Rumble, but the Rumble's a different kind of match versus this Chamber match where you can kind of see more of what she brings to the table. Liv played her part. I really liked, just again, what's one of the things I always love about Bianca's matches, how they incorporate the braid into it, and just how different people approach the braid, where Liv and others of on the heel side are actively using that against Bianca. Bayley caught the braid at one point and was like, "Oh, my bad." Like, that's too far. I went too far. Bianca winning was not a surprise to me, though. I think that was, to me, out of all the women they had in there, the smart choice to go against Rhea Ripley. It wasn't going to be Liv, because we just had that for like 7-8 months. And so this is a match that I'm very excited for. I think Bianca and Rhea can tear it up. I'm intrigued as to if Jade plays into that match, if Naomi plays into that match. But yeah, this was a good match, a good opener for the show. And I think that It's always tough kind of trying to plot out these cards. Maybe not so much this show, because we knew where we were ultimately ended at the end of the episode or the end of the card. But I think this match, and there's another match on this show, if this were another Elimination Chamber way, they could have closed the show with that.
Certainly.
Strong it was. So, yeah, congratulations to all the women. They put the work in, and Bianca Belair, Rhea Ripley, it's going to go crazy. It's going to feed generations, as the kids say, Way.
Yeah. Of the options, certainly in the aftermath of the Jade attack, I think Belair represents the most interesting, you know, person to take on Rhea Ripley. Not only should the match be awesome, but Belair is arguably involved in the hottest women's program right now with this Jade attack. Certainly at this point, I'm comfortable in saying it's the hottest women's program in the company right now. And at the moment, she's a baby face, but with the story, I think a heel turn is very possible. So a heel Belair versus a baby face Rhea is very easy to sell. And by putting Belair into the title picture, you're also presumably elevating Jade into that title picture as well. So I'm anticipating if those, you know, if that's how things are going to play out, like a Rhea Jade team against Naomi and Belair should be awesome. So man, this really sets all of those things in motion.
And it's a good way to still kind of bring Jade along slowly, but still keep the focus on her.
Absolutely. And the star power is immense. Now, I hope Naomi coming out of all of this isn't just forgotten, because I think they've done such a great job for her. I've heard you guys talk about, you know, a potential Naomi heel turn. This might be the thing that really kind of takes her to that next level.
Yeah, and I think she's got it in her. You know, a lot of folks have forgotten about this, but I will never forget about Team Bad Way back in the day with Naomi, Sasha, and Tamina. Like, they did their thing as heels, and I think that the intriguing prospect of a heel Bianca and a heel Naomi, like that could be some fun content. So yeah, I'm here for it.
Yep. RIP the big three. Yeah. very satisfying chamber match, and of course a very significant storyline payoff here at the end. So afterwards, Belair and Rhea stand face to face at the ramp, but Io Sky walks in to remind us that she's got a match with Rhea on Monday. So I mean, that very unlikely to beat Rhea, but yeah. You know, is a three-way a possibility? I mean, you can't write anything off.
It's a possibility. I just like, and we love Io. Like, Io's awesome, but it's like, yeah, that's a match you could put on Raw or anything like that, and to be a huge main event. For Mania, though, like, first time in that setting, it's got to be one-on-one.
Yeah, yeah. Before we get on to our next particular match, of course, this being a post-wrestling podcast, we have to give thanks to some of our sponsors, and of course, they include our great friends at NordVPN. Support for this podcast comes from NordVPN. Many of our listeners already use Nord to access cheaper prices to AEW pay-per-views or ad-free international versions of WWE programming. But the benefits of a VPN go beyond streaming, especially as online criminal tactics are becoming increasingly sophisticated. One threat that's been on the rise is SIM swapping, where just a bit of your personal info can help criminals impersonate you to your cell provider and virtually transfer your SIM card to their phone. Using a trusted VPN like Nord, especially when using public Wi-Fi, helps keep your data safe from prying eyes on the same network. Over at nordvpn.com/postwrestling, you can sign up for a 2-year plan for just a few dollars per month and get 4 bonus months with our link. Again, nordvpn.com/postwrestling. Try it with a 30-day money-back guarantee. Stay safe and enjoy all the benefits of a secure internet with NordVPN.
Wow, what's up? I just bought and financed a car through Carvana in minutes.
You? The person who agonized 4 weeks over whether to paint your walls eggshell or off-white bought and financed a car in minutes?
They made it easy. Transparent terms, customizable down and monthly. Didn't even have to do any paperwork.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Hey, have you checked out that spreadsheet I sent you for our dinner options?
Finance your car with Carvana and experience total control. Financing subject to credit approval.
Coming up this month on the Post Wrestling Cafe, Kate from Montreal and Karen Peterson are getting together for a review of the new film Queen of the Ring, based on the Jeff Lean book. Plus, Rewind Away tackles the 2021 film Dune, Daredevil Born Again, covered by W.H. Park and Rich Fan. Plus, we've got Collision Course, Post Pro Res, and your home for XL editions of Rewind to Raw, Dynamite, and SmackDown. Join now, postwrestlingcafe.com.
Our next match is Tiffany Stratton and Trish Stratus taking on Nia Jax and Candice LeRae. So Trish and Tiffany are, of course, in Leafs colors here, in case the crowd needed a reason to cheer for Tiffany Stratton. Trish is the only person to have wrestled on this event that also wrestled at WrestleMania 18, the last time this company was in this building. The Rock, of course, was there as well. When Trish Stratus made her debut, Nate, Tiffany Stratton was 10 months old.
That's insane. That's insane. Crazy.
She is 25. She is exactly as old as the anniversary of Trish Stratus's career.
Wow.
It's crazy. So Trish starts this match off. She tags in and gets a big reaction, of course. Faces off with Nia, hits a bunch of her moves, all of it looking pretty good, I would say. She goes for the Stratisfaction, but Nia stops it. She takes control. Tiffany Stratton comes in, hot tags, goes for the PME, but Candice trips her. Double team offense from the heels gets a two count. Stratus goes up to the top with Nia and delivers a Stratisfaction off the top rope. Candice then tries to break it up with the Lion Salt, but Trish moves out of the way as LeRae hits her own partner. Stratton tags in, hits the PME, and then gets the victory in what I felt was a decent match. But Nate, I didn't think this one was all that pay-per-view worthy heading in, and this match didn't necessarily change my opinion, especially with only four matches on the show. You know, I felt by the end of it, it felt very clear why this match was taking place, and that was to try to force a positive, you know, vocal reaction for Tiffany Stratton, thanks to the hometown reaction from a Trish Stratus and, you know, wearing Leafs colors, of course. I kind of felt like it did not feel very organically built, this tag team. And I would have liked to have seen maybe a little bit more time, with these two to just try to get me to believe that they're actually friends and that we have a reason for this tag match beyond just, hey, we need a babyface win for Tiffany Stratton. So, no Charlotte involvement either, but what did you think about the match?
Way, you know how deep my affection and praise runs for our magnanimous queen, the one and only Nia Jax. But this match should have been on Raw or SmackDown, man. Like, it did not need to be on this pay-per-view. The only thing that justified this match being on pay-per-view was the inclusion of Trish Stratus, because that should still be something special that you have to, you know, in effect pay for to see Trish Stratus wrestle at a stage like this. But no, it was a good match. It wasn't bad. It was just kind of there. It was perfunctory is kind of the word I think I'd use. Way like paint by numbers. Trish did her thing. Like, again, as somebody who woke up this morning and had to take Advil for his knees, way, the fact that Trish Stratus is out here doing this work at her age, man, and still looks as good as ever, man. Like, it's a testament to yoga and her commitment. Like, she easily could be one of these old timers that just kind of rest on their laurels, but she's out here trying to keep up with these young cats and she's doing her thing. Now, where I think this kind of starts to fall apart, way, is when you talk about Tiffany Stratton, because Tiffany Stratton had a great moment with the cash in on Nia Jax. But my thing that I've always said, whether it's on the NWA podcast or whether it's over at Nefarious, is, yeah, that was a cool moment, but what are you going to do with it? Because Tiffany Stratton is not a babyface. She is only a babyface because of the people she is fighting against. And if that's the only thing that makes you a babyface, nothing that, like, I as the viewer can latch onto, it's pretty soon the novelty is going to wear off. Like, I think she'll get cheered against Charlotte because a lot of the fans really aren't rocking with Charlotte right now. But after that, it's like, just because we don't like you, just because we like you slightly more than we like that other person, it doesn't make you likable, Tiffany Stratton. And so I feel like they've kind of got to figure something out. Because even in the promo package they played tonight, way, you know, before the match, like, Tiffany sounds like a heel, you know, in all the promotion for this. And so it's like, yeah, I think they've got to figure something out once they get past the Charlotte match. Do we want to continue her in this babyface role, or are we going to have her lean into her natural strengths as a heel?
Well, I definitely want to see how they will structure this build towards the Charlotte match to make Tiffany Stratton feel a little bit more sympathetic. And against Charlotte, I mean, that shouldn't be that difficult, but like you said, you know, it you require something a bit more than just, you know, the person who's not Charlotte. I want to see something actually likable about Tiffany Stratton come out, and we haven't really seen that yet. Her in-ring is great. Maybe that's kind of what they rely on, but as a character, I don't think she's found a great fit as a babyface just yet. So we'll see there. We get a little video from The Rock here, just showing a clip from his sort of various interviews that he's done, a clip from his Behind the Curtain documentary where he says his vision as a TKO board member is to continue to grow the company. As we see also clips of Ari Emanuel talking about how lucky the company is to have The Rock join them. It's basically a video promoting his immense successes outside of wrestling, including Red Notice, Moana 2, Red 1. Now, how have some of those Rotten Tomatoes scores been for these?
Yeah, Red Notice was not well received. Moana was, because it's Disney and it's, you know, Moana. But yeah, Red Notice and Black Adam, to me, those are kind of the big sore thumbs in The Rock's recent catalog. Sore thumbs you may hear about on a future installment of the Rocky Maivia Picture Show, which is not canceled.
No, it's not. No, not at all. Just on a slight delay.
Yeah, it's on a hiatus.
Now, I don't know if someday on the Rocky Maivia Picture Show you might be covering the Hero or Titan games, because canonically these are also vehicles for which with which The Rock is helping elevate current WWE talent, as we see footage of LA Knight on the Hero, Ivy Nile on the Titan games. Now, these took place years before.
Yes. And
I don't know if The Rock was necessarily using this to provide an opportunity for WWE superstars at that time, but nonetheless, it was cool to see some of this.
Yes, I loved how they kind of used it to fill in the narrative of this final boss, this magnanimous leader.
Yeah. He went back in time and got LA Knight an opportunity on this reality show.
It's like that one TNA pay-per-view back in the day where they revealed all the aces and eights, and Bully Ray went through that long explanation of explaining why everything made sense, and it actually made sense. It's like, okay, I'll give you credit for trying to connect some dots, man.
It worked enough for me. But Grayson Waller on Young Rock, Becky Lynch on Young Rock, Roman and Hobbs and Shaw, Zelina in Fighting for My Family, these were also clips that were shown to demonstrate The Rock's immense power and what he could provide Cody Rhodes later today. So I like this video a lot. Up next, we've got our unsanctioned match between Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn. You know, in terms of maybe title implications, there really are none. But one of the more anticipated matches, I would say, certainly from, you know, maybe listeners of this podcast and people that might even be attending here. So we get a big video kind of like, you know, encapsulating their history in a very short amount of time. And there are no rules for this match. The referee is wearing black instead of stripes. He's just here to count the submission or TKO or count out or pinfall, I should say. And instead of full lights, the ring is lit up by itself. So no sponsorship for this one. You can't really sponsor an unsanctioned match, I don't think. Cole makes mention that there was once a supervillain death match between El Generico and Kevin Steen, but this one will be different. So they start hitting each other with chairs and hockey sticks as Owens then stacks two tables on top of one another. They then brawl through the stadium crowd as Zayn sends Owens through two separate tables with backdrops. Owens goes for a second rope fisherman buster. Zayn fights it off, but Owens instead shoves Sammy to the floor through the two stacked tables, resulting in Sammy re-aggravating his injured neck from the package pile driver. Owens follows up with the fisherman buster through an unfolded chair. Sammy fights back and sends Owens through the same unfolded chair using a half-and-half German suplex. Great cutaways to some shocked fans for these ones. Sammy goes for the huluva kick, but Owens pulls the ref in the way. He then hits the stunner with a new ref in, but Sammy kicks out as Owens attacks that referee too. They start fighting up top, and Owens sends Zayn through the table with his super fisherman buster. Now a bunch of agents are coming in trying to stop the match. Zayn is shaking his wrist to show some form of neck damage. He then grabs a barbed wire chair from underneath the ring as he whacks Owens back with it twice, and then drop toe holds his face into it. Zayn places the barbed wire chair across two unfolded chairs and delivers a blue thunder bomb to Owens through it. Owens counters a huluva kick with a pop-up powerbomb, and Zayn continues to sell his neck. Owens then wraps a chair around Zayn's neck and drives it into the post two times. They then take it back to their first turn in NXT as Owens powerbombs Zayn onto the apron. And he tries it again, but unfortunately, the second time, the lift isn't that great. So Sammy fights out to let Owens do the powerbomb one more time. And somewhat unfortunate, this lone blemish taking place when it did, because this turned out to be the finish as Owens just rolls Zayn in to pin him in what I thought was a tremendously, tremendously entertaining match. And I think it's very tough to do these sort of unsanctioned matches without blood, Nate. And
yeah.
Seeing this result of the evening, you understood why they did not do blood for this particular match and saved it for a later segment. But I thought the storytelling and the selling and the pacing of the match were so strong that it still felt hardcore without the use of blood. They took a lot of damage through those chair spots. Spots definitely created some great reactions from the crowd. And I also thought the announcers did a really good job emphasizing some of the storyline implications here.
Yeah, I love this match, Way. Like, I think, again, this is a match. Were we not going to get the post-match after the main event, I think this is the match that should have closed the show. You know, just because of the emotion involved, they're both in their home country. Like, this has come to a boiling point. We've been friends and enemies and everything in between all these years, and now we're just going to beat the hell out of each other for 20 minutes. I don't know how long the match went, but it felt like a marathon. And I'm usually not one that's down for these kind of plunder matches, but when there's a story attached to it and there's something that I can connect to as a viewer, it elevates these kind of matches. You mentioned the announcers, and I love that, you know, just kind of the slow progression where about a third of the way through the match, Cole is like, come on, don't do this, Kevin. This is insane, Kevin. And then maybe 5 minutes later, Pat McAfee finally chimes in. No, Owens, don't do this, man. And then you got Wade, the heel commentator, at, you know, about 5 minutes after that, like, this is too much, Kevin Owens. You're despicable. Like, everybody is saying this man is going too far away. And just the emotion in the match, I think, you know, like, you could tell, like, you know, these guys have been waiting for a stage like this for a long time, and they did not disappoint. So I love this match. I don't know where this leaves well, we know where Kevin Owens is headed due to the post-match, but I don't know where this leaves Sammy after this, but I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, they did mention afterwards, like, stay tuned for updates on Sami Zayn. And at the moment, I guess we don't necessarily know what his direction is for Mania, or if he'll even be on the Mania card at all. But, you know, we do have some time to figure that out. But after the match, Owens exposes a mat on the floor to pile drive Zayn through it one more time as Randy Orton shows back up. He was nice enough to wait for the match to end before making his return here. Orton takes his shirt off, and he is about as massive as we've ever seen him here. He hits the RKO to Kevin Owens, gives a long dramatic pause as he throws the chair away, and immediately the crowd knows what's going on. He adjusts his knee pad and backs up, and as he's about to deliver the punt, this is when the agents are actually effective at doing their job, and they stop this from happening as Orton ends things by hitting RKOs to several security members. I thought the segment did a very good job of setting up the anticipation for this particular moment here, and we can anticipate this being the WrestleMania program and perhaps the WrestleMania payoff to the program with the punt being delivered to Kevin Owens.
Yeah, I think the key, the sign of a successful angle, Way, is if you can get me interested in something that I wouldn't have been interested in before. Like, if you just told me out of the blue, hey, at WrestleMania, they're going to run Kevin Owens and Randy Orton, I'd be like, okay, that'll be cool, I guess. But after seeing this, I'm like, okay, yeah, I think these two can put together a really good story. And yeah, like, I love that they saved that punt for a future date. So I'm here for it.
You hit me with your band move, I'm going to hit you with my band move.
Yep.
Which is kind of nice.
So escalation.
Banning moves is actually, you know, like, it's long-term storytelling is what it's resulted as. Our semi-main event of the evening, Nate, is the men's elimination chamber here. And we fully understand the reason why for it later on. There's a great video package to recap this entire sort of roster of participants for us. And I thought very notable here, prominently featuring Cena's press conference clip and his line about inserting himself into the match because it is best for business.
Well, I mean, not to kind of, you know, steal your thunder, Way, but if you bring that picture back up, you know, because Chris Ealy, the great professor himself, told us, man, if you look at these posters, there's messages. And who is sitting front and center in this poster smiling like, hey, you already know how this is going to go, baby? That man, John Cena.
Professor Chris certainly does have the foresight about what was to happen at the end of the event, something I definitely did not see. So Logan Paul makes the first entrance, and of course he shows up waving an American flag and immediately becomes one of the bigger heels of the particular match and certainly evening here. Not the biggest by the end, but certainly one of the biggest here. He should have just come out to the U.S. anthem, I think, instead of whatever song he had.
He could have borrowed Xavier Woods' old Consequences Creed outfit and come out in that. That would have worked.
That would have certainly worked. So John Cena comes out. He's wearing a Blue Jays-inspired shirt and hat combo that I'm sure they're glad that they sold before the events of the final segment here. Drew McIntyre and Seth Rollins start things off in a rematch from last year's WrestleMania. Drew immediately targets Seth's long-term lower back injury, Third in is Damian Priest as the crowd continues to chant "fuck you, Logan" to him inside his chamber. Fourth is Logan Paul, who has graffiti. Well, this is when Drake, of course, is sitting front row. So Logan has graffitied OVO onto his chamber, and apparently he graffitied "humble" on another side of the chamber.
Mm.
So I don't know what whatever that's supposed to mean.
Subliminal messages.
Maybe. Well, whose side is he on? I wonder. Priest is beating Logan Paul up, as you know, the battle of Puerto Rico ensues here between two Puerto Ricans. Fifth is John Cena, who immediately hits two shoulder tackles, an AA, a proto bomb, then another AA, and a five knuckle shuffle, followed by another AA to lay out the entire field as Drew cuts him off with the claymore. This, however, distracts Drew McIntyre, and Damian Priest pins Drew McIntyre. Drew is pissed off, hits a claymore to Priest, and eliminates Damian Priest here. So, you know, I don't know about you, but for me, I actually considered Drew one of the higher candidates to win this match, coming off of The Rock and the whole Soul deal, you know? So he gets eliminated relatively early here. Logan then capitalizes on a laid-out Damian Priest, climbing on top of Punk's self for a very high frog splash, eliminating Damian Priest here. So, after Drew hits him with the claymore, of course. So Punk at this point finally enters, and he immediately goes after Logan, the guy who eliminated him at the Rumble, of course. Punk and Cena had their first showdown in years, as the crowd recognizes what a big deal it is as they chant "holy shit." Rollins, however, cuts them off, attacking Punk and telling Cena he's mine. Logan then breaks that up as Punk comes back in. Punk hits the GTS to Paul, and Punk gets his revenge, eliminating Logan from the match. So our final three is Cena, Rollins, and Punk. And they essentially have like a really good three-way match here. Cena hoists Rollins up, and he and Punk deliver a heart attack to him. Punk and Cena are finally alone together as Cena extends his hand. Punk instead chooses to hug. They start yay booing. Punk goes for the GTS, but Cena counters with an STF. Huge reaction for that. Punk then goes for a top rope elbow as Cena rolls it into an AA. Punk kicks out at two. Another big reaction. Rollins then comes in, buckles bomb Cena into the fence, then runs him through a pod to take Cena out for a good chunk of the match. Rollins and Punk are now fighting alone as Rollins buckle bombs and stomps as Punk kicks out. Cena and Punk decide to work together by hitting a GTS followed by an AA to finally take Seth Rollins out. So our final two, Cena and Punk, and both of them have a lot to fight for. And the mood is, you know, beyond the sort of star power and the nostalgia attached to it. I think in terms of storyline, you know, the stakes are immense here. It's Punk's Mania main event that has eluded him for his entire career. And it's Cena's last WrestleMania period. So they're fighting. Cena reaches his hand out again, but Punk takes it and puts him into a GTS, gets a two count. The pleasantries are completely over here because they're both desperate. So Cena hits the AA. He gets the two count. At this point, Punk crawls towards the bottom rope, and Seth Rollins, who is still in the chamber, stomps him. Cena sees this. It's not very nice, but he takes advantage anyway. He locks CM Punk into the STF, and you can hear Cena say, "Sorry." Not gonna be that sorry by the end of the evening. Punk does some great acting here as he's just kind of fading and eventually falls asleep. He goes to sleep as John Cena has won, and really Seth Rollins has won because he prevented CM Punk from getting his WrestleMania main event. So we have our answer here. John Cena is going to challenge Cody Rhodes in the main event of WrestleMania because it is best for business. Your thoughts on the main or semi-main event?
This was a hell of a match, Way. This was a hell of a match. You know, I gave two examples of other matches that could have closed the night because of how strong they were. But now seeing the full show, this was the right choice. And, you know, Cena winning was not a surprise to me. That was my prediction on the NWA podcast when we gave our Elimination Chamber predictions. It was how are we going to get there? That was the interesting part for me. I love how this match is not just the physical contest between these dudes, but really it's about men not being able to deal with trauma, men not being able to deal with their feelings and emotions. Waiting. They could have used a Sam Wilson, Captain America out here to help talk him down a little bit because Drew, he lost because of his own self. Seth, he lost because he could not take the vengeance out of his eyes, out of his heart for CM Punk. And CM Punk lost because, you know, he had stirred up this animosity with Seth Rollins. John Cena, he wins because he realizes, like, I think there was some subtle storytelling in the match with Cena where it's like he's looking good in spurts, but he's not at the same level as some of these other guys. And so he takes a shortcut, which he probably wouldn't have taken 10 years ago, 15 years ago, because he's got to do what he's got to do because he doesn't have any other shots to get to that main event way. And so it's like there's some really good storytelling going on here. Like Logan Paul, like despicable human being, but hell of a sports entertainer. Like you can't take anything away from that dude. And Priest, like I think Priest is somebody who after he lost the world championship, I was kind of like, I don't know if he has what it takes to kind of stay in that upper range, but he hung in there with the big dogs, and I think like there's still a lot of gas in the tank for Damian Priest. But yeah, it was a really fun match. The crowd was into it the whole way. And shout out to this crowd. I think for a lot of points in the show tonight, they were engaged, they were active. Surprisingly, the Trish Stratus match wasn't one of them. But like they were here for this main event, and yeah. Hell of a match, and the right guy won. And we'll give you reasons why in about 5 minutes.
Yeah, I'm really glad we got this match when we did because following the closing angle, Cena matches are going to be entirely different from this point on. You know, we're not going to get this sort of like heavy nostalgia feeling, like feel good, you know, veteran mm-hmm. John Cena, for the foreseeable future. Towards the end, I think we'll revert back to this, but like for the next few, it's not going to be this at all. We're not going to get like Sting on his retirement type of like John Cena, right?
No.
So I'm glad they did the Punk and Cena interaction in the way that they did here, because this was like the sort of warm and fuzzy, nostalgic driven interaction that we've kind of wanted from these two. Where if they have a singles match, it'll be a very different singles match from this interaction. So I'm glad we got this little bit. The final three interaction that Cena, Rollins, and Punk had, I thought was really great because, again, you had the nostalgia of and the teasing the crowd with the nostalgia, and Rollins constantly playing the disruptor because he hates Punk so much and taking that away from us frequently. You know, I actually thought Cena looked pretty good here, you know, like somewhat protected in the match, but not really. Like, I think he's more than capable of pulling off a John Cena style match, especially with the atmosphere, especially with the storyline coming up here. You know, I don't really have any concerns for this WrestleMania main event. Do you?
Oh, no. Especially, because, you know, we will see maybe a shift in Cena's in-ring style, but also because, like, come on, man. Like, him and Cody, between the two of them, they can tell us a hell of a story, both leading up to the match and, you know, bell to bell. So I have no fear that this is going to be a hell of a match.
It's a massive, massive, massive WrestleMania main event, and even more so after the events later on. But just maybe to touch on some of the other participants here, we also have, of course, Punk and Rollins, tremendously built up through all of this. You know, it's hotter than ever now because Rollins kept Punk from his dream when Punk was pretty much at the finish line, you know, the closest Punk maybe has ever gotten to like actually, you know, getting that WrestleMania main event, and Rollins took it in the way that he did. So that match is immediately heated up, and I wonder how Roman will fit into it if the three-way is in fact maybe the direction that they go to. Meanwhile, Priest and Drew might be a direction because because of the elimination. So we await to see if those are the directions here. Support for this post-wrestling podcast comes from those of you who have picked up our merch over at Chopped Tees. T-shirts, hoodies, sweatshirts, and hats from post-wrestling and our network of shows, including the NWA Podcast, Poison Rana, The Long and Winding Royal Road, WrestleNomics, and MC Later. Free shipping to almost anywhere in the entire world. No minimum spend required. That's chopped-tees.com/post-wrestling. So as Cena celebrates, Cody Rhodes comes out, and we get our preview of course, the WrestleMania main event when the final boss shows up. And by final boss, I mean Travis Scott. maybe the other big highlight of this entire event, because Travis Scott is the one to come out first. He is accompanying The Rock, our hardcore champion himself. So The Rock comes out. The Rock and Cody are in the ring, as was advertised. But also in the ring at this point is John Cena and Travis Scott in the corner of the ring. And Travis appeared to be lighting up something. And I mean, you know, judging by his prior appearance with Jey Uso, I think we all assumed that something was, you know, like weed until he starts like actually like what, like rubbing it around himself, like it was actually sage. And
yeah,
McAfee calls it sage, so I'm willing to bet that it was sage here. Did you have any thoughts on what this was supposed to be?
I mean, I believe it was sage, but here's the thing, like this whole segment, like The Rock entering with Travis Scott, this is when my spidey senses started tingling, Wei Ting. Mm-hmm. I was like, something's afoot. Like they wouldn't. They couldn't, Wei Ting. They shouldn't, or should they? And then, like, yeah, like Travis Scott being a part of this closing segment is probably the most surreal thing on a list of surreal things that happened during this closing segment, man.
Totally surreal. But, you know, it's the type of, like, celebrity interaction that I think is going to get them that many more views.
Yes.
Attached to all of this. Like, really, they are taking in the star power and just stacking it on top of each other. And it's acting as, like, sort of multipliers, right? One of the more bizarre but I think very effective things is just having Travis Scott attached to all of this. So The Rock and Cody are in the ring. Rock again reminds Cody of the order of events that he expects here. You will embrace me as your brother, and I will embrace you as my champion. He says, I want it all, Cody. I want your mind. I want your soul. And God have mercy, I need your soul. He says, if the answer is yes, then the American nightmare will live forever. But if the answer is no, then tonight the dream dies again. Mm. Meanwhile, Cody says, I want it all, Rock. My soul no longer belongs to me because I gave my soul to this ring and these people a long time ago. Cena is clapping in the background as Cody says, hey, Rock, go fuck yourself. Mm. Yes. Cody and Cena embrace ahead of Mania, and Cena gives Rock a stare, and Rock makes a throat slit gesture as Cena kicks Cody in the balls. John Cena, everybody, has turned heel.
Waiting. What a time to be alive, brother. This, you know, I enjoyed Captain America Brave New World. I've seen it twice, Way. I'll probably go a third time before it leaves the theaters, but this right here, this was cinema, man. Like, again, like Chris, and I'll give Chris credit, man. Chris has been calling a Cena heel turn during this final run for months. I didn't believe it, man. Why mess up the merch, baby? But when Rock is walking to the ring and we just kind of go back and forth, cut between him and Travis Scott, and then we cut back to the ring and see Cena and Cody, I'm like, yo, this would be a perfect setup for a John Cena heel turn, because it makes Cody even more of a babyface. Like, hey, I turned down this golden goose of an offer. And John Cena, again, going back to how he won the Chamber match, like, hey, dog, I got to take every opportunity I can at this point. Even though I'm already, you know, a movie star, so to speak, like, I need this WrestleMania main event. I need this championship. I need to break all these records. And so I'm doing what I got to do. And yeah, like it played out perfectly. I think just kind of Cody's part, you know, where Cody's like, yeah, man, you can't have my soul. Here's the thing, Wei. I thought he was going to say, I gave my soul to Brandy. You know, being, you know, I'm a romantic at heart, Wei Ting. I thought he was going to be Brandy Rose got my soul. But he's like, nah, man, I gave my soul to this business and these people. And then he dropped the F-bomb on The Rock. I'm like, okay, Cody, it's a little spicy right now. And then when Cena was acting way too happy when Cody said that, right? Like, I'm like, yeah, you can, you know, give him an attaboy, you know, but Cena was getting way too hyped at this moment when Cody cussed The Rock out. And I was like, oh, the fix is in. Here we go. Let's strap in. And when he hit him with that kick to the lower extremities, I'm like, yes, we have finally here, Wei. We have waited for years and years and more years for John Cena to finally turn heel. And on the way out, this man Peacemaker gives us what we wanted. And I'm here for it, man.
Yeah. Whenever the behind the curtain documentary comes out about this year's WrestleMania, I'm very interested to know if they touch on whether or not this was always the plan. You know, I mean, Cody versus Cena, I think, has always been the rumored plan, but
yes,
it certainly I didn't think a heel turn would be attached to it.
Well, here's the thing, Wade. I think this is mirroring last year's WrestleMania. You know, the old saying, history doesn't repeat itself, but it sure as hell rhymes a lot. I think last year when they had a direction for WrestleMania and kind of took the pulse of the audience, they're like, okay, we got to pivot. And then they gave us something probably even greater than what they had planned in terms of, you know, the Bloodline stuff and Cody and Roman and Rock and Seth and all that. And I think this year they saw the reaction to that first Rock, I Want Your Soul promo. Well, even people like me that love this man, Dwayne The Rock Johnson, was like, that wasn't it, my guy. That just wasn't it. I think they're like, okay, we can't have that be kind of like the lasting image. Because why would Cody even accept the offer if that was your final pitch? Like, nah, my boy, you're just being weird and creepy out here. And so I think, you know, I don't know if this was the plan all the way along, but if not, it's a hell of a pivot. Because it's like, now you got me intrigued, because it's like, okay, Cena, Cody, babyface was going to be a fun match either way. And I thought, you know, maybe we'd get shades of Rock and Hogan where one of them has to be a little bit more heelish in the match. But at the end of the day, they're both good guys. But now it's like, yeah, you got me all the way in, because we got Cody, Devontae Rhodes, and this man Peacemaker who is here for war, John. I just had a flashback. John Pollock popped into my vision because I'm so excited right now. But he's ready for war, not peace. And yeah, like, I can't wait for that first promo. Like, not even a match, just that first Cena promo where he explains his actions. This is why I did it. I did it for The Rock. You know, I'm ready for a way.
It's funny how, you know, the audience has been begging for Cena to turn heel for years. And he finally does it at the moment when we love him the most, right?
Yes.
When he's about to leave, right?
Long-term booking.
I'm willing to bet that, like, as soon as The Rock appeared, that this would have been the plan. Because I can't see, like, him saying, I want your soul without, like, a big payoff to it. And this, I imagine, was always going to be that. And if it is, man, this is a hell of a direction. Again, I didn't think it was going to happen, just thinking how difficult it would be for the audience to boo John Cena. And that still might be an issue, but if done well, I think audiences will be agreeable and get into a story, especially if now teaming up with, you know, Final Boss Dwayne Johnson.
Yes. So that's another layer to this, because we know the history between Rock and Cena, and the fact that these two are on the same page ostensibly to hold down the current generation. Like, that's some good storytelling beats right there. And then the other thing, Way, that really hit me with this closing segment, man, is, like, Cody Rhodes. I've said for years, like, is he the greatest in-ring worker in the world today? No. But I think what he is one of the best in-ring storytellers. Like, he can tell you a story. Like, I'm thinking about, you know, even that Kevin Owens match last month. Like, he told you a story throughout that match. So, like, imagine what he and Cena can put together. Like, it's gonna be amazing, and a hell of a way to close out WrestleMania this year.
It's gonna be outstanding, yeah. And maybe just to kind of talk about maybe some of those other sort of like storyline parallels between The Rock and Cena. Cena, of course, in the feud with The Rock, had criticized Dwayne for being a part-timer, only showing up partially. Mm-hmm. You even had much of the roster criticize Cena for that exact sort of hypocrisy yesterday. Cena, at this point, rather than, I guess, address it, he's embracing it. And he has now embraced the role of being the Hollywood part-timer, giving us a new Team Hollywood here, you know, between like a new Mega Powers, if you will, you know, with Dwayne Johnson and John Cena. So what a scene here. And Travis Scott, how could we forget?
Yes, yeah.
The key to it all.
That to me was the funniest part of this. Like, Travis Scott, along with these two, it very much gave Dennis Rodman hanging out with the NWO vibes, and I loved it.
Yeah. So I'm just anticipating, like, what Cena's reasoning will be. Of course, like, when we look at what's on the surface, all these things that The Rock has, the person who is closest to The Rock's level is John Cena. He's in all these movies already. Like, what more could he want? Well, I guess you always want more. And, you know, it could be a WrestleMania main event. It could be a seat on the board of directors. Mm-hmm. It could be his own version, his own Hobbs and Shaw. What's his character's name?
Cena?
Dom's brother? What's his name?
Yeah. He's Dom's brother in the Fast and the Furious. Jacob,
yeah. Hobbs and Jacob and Hobbs?
Jacob and Hobbs.
Do you not want to see that? Come on. I don't know if I want to see that, to be honest with you. Vin Diesel needs to come in to save Cody, clearly.
Yes.
That's the only hope.
That's what the whole Rock Vin Diesel feud, it's all been building to this moment.
Yes. Yes, it has. So I didn't even finish the segment here. So the beatdown continues. Cena, the gold Rolex, I think this is from Cody, gold Rolex suddenly appears on the ground. And the significance of this, of course, is just to kind of take everybody back. Cody had given, I believe, the participants of the tag team main event last year, all gold Rolex watches. Mm-hmm. And Rock revealed this. Now, it was never answered what the Rock gave back to Cody in that segment on the night after WrestleMania. Could he have given back the gold Rolex, and could it have been currently in Cody's possession? Anyway, maybe that this was actually a reference to that. Maybe this will all kind of play itself out. But Cena picks up this gold Rolex and starts hitting the Rock with like a set of brass knuckles. So we await the gold Rolex knuckle shuffle coming up as part of his repertoire.
I'm man enough to admit when I'm wrong on these microphones. I feel like the apologies should be as loud as the disrespect. And on the Kings of Sport a few months ago on Nefarious, after the first Raw on Netflix, I was very vociferous and like, man, Final Boss Rock is dead, because of his performance that night where it was 100% corporate Dwayne, and then we didn't have anything following that to lead us to believe that they were coming back to this character. So I'm like, man, you wasted a great character, Dwayne. How could you do this, Dwayne? But nah, man, like silly me waiting to doubt this man, Dwayne The Rock Johnson, perhaps the greatest actor of our time, because he knew he had that final boss card in the back pocket. He was just waiting for the right moment to play it, and damn it if this segment didn't just hit.
Yeah. Yeah. Again, it's interesting to think about, like, what was, like, I wonder if they will push this as if The Rock, if you remember, The Rock on NXT said, the final boss always has a plan, right? Or The Rock always has a plan. Did he truly know that this was going to be the destination on that Netflix show? Like, are we giving them that much credit? You know?
No. I don't think so either. I love Rock, no.
Yeah. So Cody at this point is busted open, and Cena is just choking Cody with a tie. He is Jacob Toretto in his first appearance in Fast and Furious here. So
I think a notable thing about Cena in this beatdown way is Cena doesn't say anything. There's no trash talk. It's just violence and physical action.
He's a machine. He's the prototype.
Yeah, and just the look in his eyes when Rock gave him the throat slash motion, just kind of like it wasn't this – I get to do what I want to do. It was this kind of resignation, like, hey, got to do what I got to do, kid. And then, you know, he proceeds to beat this man down. And so, again, man, that first promo from Cena following this is going to be a must-see moment, because what's the rationale behind this, John? Why did you do it, John? Is it just for another title? Is it just for the fame? Why did you do it, John Cena? That's what the people are clamoring for now. So, yeah, I was already excited for Cena, Cody. But this takes it up to a whole nother level, man.
I wonder. So again, like, the rumor is Roman is somehow involved with Punk and Rollins.
Yeah.
I wonder if Roman fits better in all of this, though. You know, like, he and Cody have already established a relationship, and who do you bring back to help you against the final boss than Roman Reigns, his own cousin? You know.
And then on both sides of the aisle, you would have two teams made up of these stars that went to war at multiple WrestleManias.
Yes, yes, absolutely. And people, most of which have been in the Fast and Furious universe.
Yes, we so just got to get Cody in there now.
Vin Diesel versus Travis Scott being our sort of a side feud, ringside with these managers. So anyway, The Rock closes the segment. He's whipping Cody Rhodes with his own soul, the weightlifting belt that has his dad's death date on it. Travis Scott even gets a shot in here. receipt coming for Travis Scott, I'm sure, at WrestleMania.
Yes.
So anyway, this is the closing scene, and what a closing scene to what I thought was a very entertaining and a very newsworthy Elimination Chamber event.
Yeah, this was... I saw somebody on Blue Sky, like, and I echo the sentiments. It might have been Phil Lindsay, but it's like, yeah, this was some Dusty Rhodes ass shit right here. Like, was, a Dusty Rhodes tribute if I've ever seen one. And just the look of The Rock's face when him, Cena, and Travis Scott are walking back up the aisle, just the look in his eyes, man. It's like, yeah, like they, I don't, again, Wade, I can't give them enough credit to say this is what they knew they were going to be. This is the place they knew they were going to be at back when that first Raw debuted on Netflix. But whatever, whenever they got the plan in motion, the plan is fully engaged now, and I'm excited to go along for this ride, man.
Yeah, it's going to be a massive, massive WrestleMania. I mean, not only is the star power already there with Cena and Cody, with the storyline attached to it, with Dwayne attached to it, and who knows who else attached to it, it just, it makes it now novel just from even a storytelling perspective, because we're getting heel John Cena on the biggest stage possible.
Yes. And here's another thing, Wade, that I'm thinking about, like why this makes so much sense. Because another thing people have been talking about is how long can Cody Rhodes maintain this babyface momentum? Mm-hmm. And I feel like, and this is no shade to the day-to-day current roster of the company, but outside of Roman, it's like, is there anybody you believe is going to beat Cody Rhodes right now? Like, not Kevin Owens, not AJ Styles, none of these cats. You know, even though, like, they're all great performers, I just don't believe that they take the belt off of Cody for them. Mm-hmm. But when you've got Cody in there with guys like Cena and eventually in there with guys like The Rock, now I can believe Cody Rhodes' title is threatened. And yeah, now that makes Cody more of a sympathetic babyface. So, yeah, I think they're cooking that way.
100%. Now, let's get on, like, continue on that thread. Do you think a title change is taking place?
Yes.
In this match?
Yes, I do. I do. Yeah. I think Cody finally gives up the belt. Like, I think he'll get it back, but yeah, you can't go through all of this turning Cena heel and then having heel Cena lose his first match. Nah, mm-hmm. Cena's got to win this.
Yeah. Yeah, man, I'm excited. I'm very excited. So those are some of our thoughts on Elimination Chamber. We now open it up to the Post Wrestling Cafe to give their thoughts. Of course, we're also open for Super Chats, as this is a live show on YouTube, and a lot of you guys have already chimed in. So let's go first of all here to John Taylor, who sends $5 to say, there's only one man I need to hear from after the shocking turn of events against our man, Cody Devante Rhodes, our greatest of all time, Nate Melton.
I hope I delivered. I hope I brought some insight and some clarity to this confusing time for all of us. But yeah, don't lose hope. Don't lose faith. Cody Devante Rhodes has been through tougher challenges, and he's been through hard times, Wei Ting, but he's always found a way to come out on top, even though I just predicted 2 minutes ago that he won't come out on top in this one. So
now those are our predictions, and we could be wrong, because we were certainly wrong about this prediction. Yes. Of Cena not turning heel. And here to rub it in our faces is Chris Ely, who sends $20 just to say, I told you so. Ha ha ha. Professor Chris Ely, Chris, fully deserved.
So, see, I love Chris Ely, obviously. That's my brother and my friend. But Chris Ely, what a lot of people don't see from the professor is he's got a petty side. He's the petty professor. This man dropped $20 on the table just to say, I told you so. Like, okay, Chris, on your left, you get your victory lap, brother. But yeah, you did predict this a few months back. That moment, Wade, I haven't had a moment like this in wrestling in a while where the wheels start spinning in my head like 5 minutes before the thing happens. And I'm like, no, they're not. They're not going to do this, right? Like this. And then it happens. It's like, wow. Like that. It makes the perfect sense right now, Wade, but it did take guts to pull the trigger on making John Cena in this victory lap stage, this final, you know, this final run, a heel. Because people love John Cena right now. And it's like, yeah, that dude that you love, we going to put him with the final boss, and y'all going to hate this dude 2 weeks from now.
But secretly, we're actually going to love him.
Yes. More,
right? Thank you, Chris, as always.
Thanks, Chris.
Of course, listen to him with Nate on the NWA podcast once a month. And also on
the grass.
And also, of course, on the newly branded Nefarious Media Podcast Network. Black Mega Man sends $2 to say the Travis Scott turn we've waited for happened. Now, I'm looking at chat room, maybe debating whether or not he's already been a heel for some time. But
he was cool with Jey Uso, so like I think that made him a babyface. But now he's with The Rock, so we don't know. Whose side is Travis on?
I want to know Drake's reaction to all of that unfolding. Okay, did somebody have a Drake cam on him?
Oh wait, do you think? Had it not been for the beef, do you think this could have been Drake's spot in this? Drake, Cena, and The Rock, the ultimate heel stable.
Oh, my God. That would be the ultimate.
Then we get Cody and Kendrick. Oh, my goodness.
Oh, man. Yes.
That would have been amazing.
Yes. I don't know. No. I mean, Travis Scott seems pretty tied into like the whole wrestling thing right now. Yeah. And I'm sure if Drake wanted to, like, they would have considered
Drake
it.
Too many. Like, I think the only reason he was here was because it's in Toronto. Like,
yeah. 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 I don't think they'll be touching that right now. Jake from the Windy City, member of the channel for 26 months on our YouTube side of things. Thank you, Jake. He says, Survivor Series in Vancouver, no one booed the anthem. Sad how much has changed in 3 months, but what an insane ending. 20 years in the making. Yes, yes. Andrew Brown sends $2 to say, Fatu or Breaker, do the Rainmaker Shock. Do the Rainmaker Shock. Okay, so inferring that Fatu or Breaker could beat either Cody or, I don't know, whoever's the world champion. Afterwards, sure, but not ahead of me
right now. I think he might have been addressing my comments that nobody's credible enough really to beat Cody, and I think Fatu and Breaker certainly can be, but they're not right now.
Okay, so maybe Andrew is actually asking, can either of these two beat John Cena? Could they, like, okay, assuming Cena wins the championship, does he have to drop it back to Cody, or could he line it up for one of these new guys?
He could, but I think you get more juice out of the story if Cody is the one that gets it back, because then that still continues the storyline of Cody and Rock versus if Breaker or Fatu gets it, then there's kind of like this weird intermediary period, and it's like we still got to get it back to Cody and Rock because that may be our WrestleMania main event next year.
Yeah, I think it's Cody's story. You know, it's always Cody's story. He's the main character, and this is like the A program. So, Matt Hahn, a member for 11 months, asks, "What if Punk uses his Heyman favor to make it a triple threat with Cody and Cena?"
It could happen, but I don't think. Like, I think you start muddying the waters. Like, I think you've got a perfect one-on-one, much like I was saying with Rhea and Bianca earlier. Like, yeah, sure, EO could be in there and it'd be a hell of a match. Sure, Punk could be here and it'd be a hell of a match. But I think for this Mania season, Punk and Seth, like, that's the one, whether it's a three-way with Punk, Seth, and Roman, or just Punk and Seth, that's the score that needs to be settled this year. And then maybe next year is the year, if Muffin Man is still around, you know, and things are still copacetic way, that's the year he gets his WrestleMania main event finally.
I think so too. Yeah. I actually like the fact that, like, we've established this, like, CM Punk goal of wanting to main event WrestleMania, having them take it away from him for a year kind of acts as, like, his version of WrestleMania 39 for Cody.
Yep.
Now we're making the audience and making him wait for a year for it as he chases it. So I kind of like that. In fact, if he never achieves it until maybe, like, the end of his career, I don't know if I'd be that mad at it.
Coming up this month on the Post Wrestling Cafe, Kate from Montreal and Karen Peterson are getting together for a review of the new film Queen of the Ring, based on the Jeff Lean book. Plus, Rewind Away tackles the 2021 film Dune, Daredevil Born Again, covered by W.H. Park and Rich Fan. Plus, we've got Collision Course, Post Pro Res, and your home for XL editions of Rewind to Raw, Dynamite, and SmackDown. Join now, postwrestlingcafe.com.
All right. Thank you guys for some of those super chats. And let's go to forum.postwrestling.com for some of your written feedback from our Post Wrestling Cafe patrons. Again, you can join the Post Wrestling Forum. It's free to join, sign up. And we had some issues, but we've rebuilt, and we rebuilt in a big way. We've had a lot of great interaction in the forum lately. So it's free to sign up, forum.postwrestling.com. But if you're a patron, you do have the ability to leave feedback for our shows. And we start things off with Sean from Toronto, and I'm looking right now. We have a lot of feedback, so I don't think we can go to everything, but we'll try our best here, Nate. Sean says, felt a little bit of FOMO seeing that many people I know posting pictures on social media from inside of Rogers Center while cash-strapped me was stuck at home watching on Netflix. I did not have $200 plus to spare, even though I noticed the same day tickets went way down. I think it was tone-deaf for WWE and or Pat McAfee to play up the tense relations between Canada and the U.S. right now by having McAfee frequently badmouth Canada for booing the U.S. anthem, a response WWE was likely hoping for, since the U.S. anthem is rarely played during Canadian WWE events. The show itself was fine, though I'm ultimately glad I wasn't part of the cavernous crowd, since the setup looked much more minimal than WrestleMania 18, and I don't even know if the Dumbotron was even on or after being incorporated into the former stage. All right. We kind of spoke our thoughts on that, and
I agree with him in a certain aspect, where I do feel like you know, the reaction was going to be what the reaction was going to be given the real world implications of what's going on right now. I do feel like Pat kind of, like, the first time he said something, I was like, okay, cool, you know, there's a response. But then I think he went back to it four or five times during the course of the night. And it's like, at a certain point, it's like, yeah, now you're making me dislike you, Pat McAfee. Like,
yeah, yeah. I mean, we wonder if it's McAfee saying it or if he's being instructed to say
right.
it. I mean, I also think like they have interest with, you know, various sponsors where maybe something like that, like they feel the need to downplay or maybe at least like give their stance on,
you know, Terry and Real American Beer weren't happy with that, brother.
Sure. Right.
You got to say something, Pat. Tell them what we stand for, brother.
Stig says, holy shit, that ending. I guess Cena just fancied a little heel run before he retires, which makes sense. It's easy to turn Cena back face later in the year. Yes. However, this 100% means Cena doesn't win the title at WrestleMania. As a face versus face, Cena might have won, and the match would have been kept us on tenterhooks. However, there's no way he wins number 17 as a heel. So where does this leave Punk now, though? I expected him to be the one to sell out after missing out on the Mania main event again. I don't want him inserted into the Rollins Reigns program. So does that make him this year's Logan Paul sacrificial lamb? So first of all, I think we seem to be in disagreement that he could win number 17 as a heel. Yeah,
I think he will, because winning the title as a heel or a face, to me, that is less important than when he finally hangs up the boots, the crowd embraces him. And so I think there's almost like a Darth Vader story here, where Cena went to the dark side to accomplish this goal, to break the record, and then when he finally hangs up the boots, he's gone through something where maybe he helps Cody, maybe he atones for his mistakes, and he goes out as the hero we all knew he was. He just had a rough couple months, Wade. We all go through tough times. But yeah, I think it's very plausible. In fact, I think it's going to happen, because if he's now aligned with The Rock, now aligned with the final boss, and he fails first time out, then, and you know, no offense, Street Champ, he's no better than Solo Sikoa, man. And John Cena ain't no damn Solo Sikoa. Like, Cena has to win this, in my opinion.
Yeah. I mean, this is now so hot that I think you have to start it off with an actual win on the biggest stage. And I don't think it really ruins it. You know, like you said, Nate, there's still enough nostalgia and like happy feeling to be had later on. But you can argue maybe you won't always have a John Cena heel run do.
And then the crazy thing about this, way, then this is how good this story is already, and they just started telling it, way, because Cody Rhodes, our man Devontae, eventually there will come a point in time where Cody will have a heel turn. And there's things that are happening and that are going to happen during this Cena feud that can be the impetus. Like, in the back of his mind, he's like, hey, man, this man John Cena, you know, he switched sides and got my title. And at the end of the day, when he left, people still loved him. So I got to do what I got to do. Like, maybe a year or two from now. Oh, Wade, this is good. This is good. I'm excited, Wade.
Alib says, Chris from Vancouver says, they didn't air the national anthems live, so Pat bringing it up multiple times about the horrible Canadians, especially after they tried to make such an effort to show how many magical moments have happened in this arena previously, and bragging about how much money they got from the fans really left a bad taste in my mouth. Zayn and Owens delivered more than anticipated, and thankful that we have some direction on what Rock was talking about, however unnecessary the road to get there was. So I'm still a little confused. I watched on Netflix, and I guess maybe just Peacock had that.
Yeah. I can't verify, because I got home from work, and then when I started the show, that was when the women's chamber was starting. So they had already done the preamble and all that. So they may have aired it on Peacock, which is kind of interesting. Like, the country that got booed, you're showing it to, and not the country that did the booing. It's very interesting.
Right. All right, let's go up next to Jeremy in Texas. When the main event of the show ended up being the Rock and Cody segment, you knew something big was going to happen. A John Cena heel turn may not have hit like Hogan in the NWO, but I was shocked that they went with it. Is the Cena merch tour now going to end since he's a heel? To me, the WrestleMania match with Cody is way more interesting than face versus face. I think they'll continue to sell plenty of merch. Now, the messaging on the merch might not be the same as it currently is, but they'll probably still make a lot of money. Like the Rock was selling I Want Your Soul shirts. So
I want Dwayne Johnson to get all the good things in life, but if you put honest, hardworking money towards the I Want Your Soul shirt, come on, baby.
Props to
subscribe to the Post Wrestling Patreon and the Nefarious Media Patreon instead, folks.
That is it. Props to Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens for killing themselves for that crowd. Moving forward, I love the story with The Rock and Cena, since Cena has basically followed The Rock's path transitioning away from WWE. Best for Business has always been a heel line going back to The Authority. I'm amazed they actually went through with it. All right, let's go up next to Evan, who says, so much of modern day WWE is so predictable, so I have to give the entire huge props for having the balls to turn Cena heel in his final year. As for people crying out logic, one of the main talking points has been that Cena hasn't won a singles match in 5 years. He got lucky to win the chamber with Rollins stomping on Punk. In Cena's mind, he can't beat Cody Rhodes in a straight up singles match, so he aligns with The Rock to win. Makes perfect logic, brilliant booking. So okay, assuming Cena didn't win the chamber, then what was The Rock's plan going to be?
Yeah, the Rock would have had to have a hell of a backup plan. But yeah, I do feel like, again, that's kind of what I was alluding to in the match way. Not so much that Cena is bad in ring now, but like there's a desperation. It's like, hey, man, I'm doing my best and I'm still barely keeping up with these new cats. I got to do something. I got to take a shortcut. And when the shortcut presented itself via Seth Rollins stomping on Muffin Man's head, he had to take that route. And so, like, again, like, that's why I'm so interested in this promo. Like, when did this character make the decision to align with The Rock? Was it before the match? Was it during the course of the match? You know, did Travis Scott whisper in his ear backstage? We need to know the answers to these questions, Way.
It's all Travis Scott, I'm sure. Jordan from the Bronx says, I don't think I understand that ending outside of the shock value. Why would Cena need Rock's help? He just beat five other guys in a match that he didn't have any advantages in. If he's chasing the championship record, surely his character would be confident enough to not need any unfair advantage. What would have happened if Cena lost the match? When that promo first happened, I immediately assumed Punk would make the turn because of his desperation to main event the one show he's dreamed of. So I suppose the next 2 months will flesh this out, but my immediate reaction is that this was a swerve for swerve's sake. So, I mean, beyond just winning the championship, I mean, The Rock's sort of offering for a corporate champion is power. Right?
Yep.
Societal power, Hollywood power. And like, again, Cena has a lot of these things, but he's not at Dwayne Johnson's level. No. He's not a board member of TKO. So I'm sure maybe that's it. It comes down to greed, right? Which kind of works in this case.
Yeah. Like there's always more. There's always more I can take. Even if I have everything, there's always more I can take. And so, yeah, that, again, I understand where some of these, comments are coming from. Is like, I don't understand, like, why would he, like, that's going to be the part of the story that's interesting to me, though. Like, what was your motivation behind this, John Cena? Like, why did you make this decision? And I trust Cena in his ability to give us a believable rationale for why he took the step that he never took for his entire career. Why now?
He wants to be in Disney movies.
Yes, that's the thing.
Has he done a Disney yet? You know?
I believe the Tooth Fairy was a Disney movie. No, shoot, I'm thinking of The Rock. yeah, so Rock is in bed with Disney full throttle. You know, between the Moana movies, the, you know, Tooth Fairy, all that. Race to Rich, Witch Mountain. The less said about that, the better. But yeah,
he guest appeared in Hannah Montana episode.
Damn, that was so long ago.
Yeah. Okay. I don't know. Chat room, let us know.
Yeah, Warner Brothers movies is Warner Brothers money is cool, but it ain't Disney money. It ain't that Mickey money,
it's
man.
Not Mouse. All right. Alex in Portland says, when Dwayne said it's not about having a match and it never has to culminate in a match, who would have guessed he'd be talking about Travis Scott? Scott's involvement did nothing for me, and I don't want to see him again. WWE is going to have some pretty good writing to convince me that Cena, a 16-time world champion and the guy that just won the chamber, needs The Rock. Are we to imply that Cena's soul is cheaper than Cody's? The value of John Cena's soul, I would argue probably quite a bit.
This may be a tariff on Cody's soul.
Yeah, yeah. Those are all questions that I hopefully will be answered in a promo. But
I'm never the let it play out guy way.
Yeah.
But again, like, we just finished watching the show, so like, my thoughts may change after I've had, you know, a few days or a few weeks to digest this and see how they follow it up. But I'm the let it play out guy on this one, way, because I'm genuinely intrigued by what they gave us tonight.
Are you let it play out with Travis Scott though and his involvement? Do we actually get an explanation about that?
I don't think so. I think Travis Scott is just going to show up. Again, he's the Dennis Rodman, NWO Dennis Rodman of this generation. Like, he's a celebrity that just shows up and hangs out with the stars and beats people up, you know, in a cowardly fashion.
Let's go up next to Big Willie, Will from Toronto, who showed up in his post wrestling jacket. Thank you very much. We still have a few on sale
limited,
right now.
Limited edition.
I believe actually at 40% off for the time being, because Dickie is looking to get the stock out of his basement, I'm sure. So chop-tees.com/post-wrestling, where you can, of course, also pick up your NWA podcast merchandise. Will from Toronto says, I love the Cena turn because I never saw it coming. Turns out it was a real nightmare for the American Nightmare in Canada. I guess in more ways than one. So if you haven't got one, yeah, okay. So thank you for the plug for the post jackets. It kept them warm waiting in the cold today. Excellent.
Nice.
Let's go up next to this person's name, Tristan, who says, I attended live. What an amazing atmosphere. Haven't attended a live PLE since Survivor Series at the ACC. A few reflections. Booing during the U.S. anthem was deafening. Some folks like me chose to sit in silence and then stand and sing during the Canadian anthem. I get it and I agree with Wei. One of the only vehicles folks have to protest our current political climate and direct attention at the U.S. administration is this action. I could see McAfee getting upset during his intro on the broadcast, but we couldn't hear any of his audio. But it seemed to me he was very animated about that. I think Americans need to understand it's not about them for many of us. It's about their government. I love the Cena heel turn. It all makes sense to me. For years now, he hasn't won. His own way of life, his motto, etc. have failed him. And in the last run of his career, he wants to achieve that success again. He had no other option but to turn on his own belief system and align with The Rock to do it. He can claim he's already sold his soul years ago. Look at his merch. Look at how much money he's making off of his last run, etc. I think this makes the Built-A-Mania more dynamic. A face-face Cody Cena build did not seem intriguing to me. This does. I feel like his heel turn was telegraphed in the Chamber match. When Punk was kneed out and Cena slapped on a submission, that's typically a move for a heel to win a match, passing the face out when they're already out. So I felt it was coming from that point, not very Cena-like. To see this live go down live was incredible. People were shocked. Kids were speechless. Popcorn and beer were flying all over my section. It was like the Hogan turn, but for this generation. Well, you could certainly say you were there for this major moment. Another major moment involving Dwayne Johnson in the Sky Dome. So there you go. Another thought that really came to mind to me was, like Cena, for years, we know he's got some record for make-a-wishes. And for a long time, not turning heel was at least like heavily influenced by his want to do a lot of that stuff. So I guess it makes you wonder, is that sort of in jeopardy, or like has Cena sort of like passed his time of being the make-a-wish
champion? Here's the thing, and again, apologies in advance, ladies and gentlemen, because maybe it's the residuals of the Advil PM still in my bloodstream, but I think it would be amazing if Cena still did the Make-A-Wish. Like, he did the real Make-A-Wish, right? But then he did, like, a parody. Like, we don't see the real Make-A-Wish.
No.
Like, he does that in secret. No. Then he comes out with the Break-A-Wish Foundation, where heel Cena is just crushing these little kids' dreams, Wei. It would be amazing. Like he still does the good stuff behind the scenes. Like, the real kids aren't affected by this, but we hire some actors, and, like, Cena is crushing these kids' dreams, and, like, The Rock is just in the background, like, that's my champion.
How dare you?
The Break-A-Wish Foundation.
The Break-A-Wish. Oh, my God. Copyright that, Nate. They got to put that on a T-shirt. Oh, goodness.
I'd buy that T-shirt.
Yeah. Wow. Maybe it was some kid's wish for Cena to turn heel, and that's
maybe
the reason.
Maybe that's the whole explanation.
Yeah. All right, lastly, let's go to Andy B, who says, all three angles were home runs. Turned my trepidation about Mania into a lot of anticipation. Got to get all the juice out of the Cena angle right now. All right, so what a turn of events from The Rock's I Want Your Soul promo and all the feedback, including those from us, into today. So, you know, they have set us on course for the road to WrestleMania, and we can all say that we were certainly sports entertained with the events of tonight. Last one here. Super chat from Bluey, who sends 100 rupees to say, this Cena doesn't need help. He's 16 times champ argument is stupid. They are literally doing a losing streak story. He needed a Rollins assist too. So yeah, I'm sure that might be a part of that explanation. I guess it's more about the justification for why he would want The Rock's help in Hollywood and all these other things. But I think you could justify that too. So
yeah.
Brother Nate Milton, what a pleasure it was to talk about this very eventful show with you. Where can people hear more of your thoughts on not just professional wrestling, but really a bunch of other things?
Yeah, this was a great fun way. Again, thanks for the invite. Salute to the WWE. I don't often give them their props, but they were cooking tonight, and Dwayne The Rock Johnson gave us some real soul food, if you will, Wei Ting. But for more of me and my team, you can check out Nefarious Media. So Nefarious Media Network is, you know, the home for all things Nate Milton, Chris Ely, Ray Williams, you know, two-way Ray on these streets, Andrew Thompson. We got so many contributors. We've had meetings this past couple of weeks with two or three people who are going to join the network. And so this has been a labor of love, something that's been a long time coming. We've been podcasting with the Kings of Sports since 2013. And after the results of the election last year, you know, it kind of lit a fire in me and some of the guys in terms of, like, we've been doing, you know, the podcast and stuff, but, you know, after the pandemic, life just kind of, you know, it just kind of becomes routine way. And just doing this has reinvigorated my passion and the passion of the fellas and the ladies that are joining us, Chinyere Ogafor, Brittany Monet, Jennifer Smith. Like, we talk wrestling, politics, sports, pop culture. We got a couple MCU reviews up right now, especially in the heels of Brave New World. And so, yeah, I'm really excited about Nefarious. I told John Pollock the other day, man, like, just starting this, like, we're only a month and a half in, like, not even 2 months into the rebrand. And my respect that I've always had for you and John has gone through the roof because what y'all have done here with Post, to me, that's amazing and wonderful and beautiful. And we're trying to, you know, have that same sort of outlook with the people that we collaborate with and the viewpoints that we bring to the stage, man. And so, yeah, we're very excited to be in this chapter. And if y'all want to help us out, man, don't spend money on the Dwayne Johnson I Want Your Soul t-shirt. Head over to patreon.com/nefariousmedianetwork and, you know, hit us up. Join the Patreon. Try it out for a month. That's what I'd say to people. Try it out for a month. If you dig what we're doing, consistency is another thing, Wade. We've been consistent. New show, and this is light work for you and John, but longtime listeners of the Kings of Sport know, once Marcus left, there were times where we'd go 4 weeks, 5 weeks, 6 weeks without a new show, just because, you know, things were difficult with the work-life balance. But we put out shows every week since January 20th, and we don't plan on stopping anytime soon. We're digging what we're doing here, and if y'all want to help out, man, check out the Patreon. $5 gets you in the door. Try it out for a month. And if you enjoy it, man, stay subscribed and tell your friends, because we're trying to change the game, Way, by any means necessary, even if those means may be nefarious. So, again, salute to you for having me on here tonight, man. Salute to you and John for what y'all have built here at Post Wrestling. And salute to the audience for riding with us, man. This is all setting up the eventual Nate Milton heel turn 2 years from now.
Ooh. I'll just say, when Nate calls himself your favorite podcaster's favorite podcaster, he's referring to me, okay?
Yes.
Like, Nate, you are my favorite podcaster, you know? I think you talking about anything, not just professional wrestling, is immediately entertaining. I love your takes. I love your delivery. I think you just have a natural talent for this that is just infectious. So I'm loving what you guys are doing at Nefarious Media. You've got podcast about... Nate, you've been very vocal about your love of Brave New World, you know, one of the more vocal defenders on the internet about Brave New
World. So this again, like, I feel like I've been reinvigorated, not to steal a line from Kendrick Lamar, but I've been reincarnated the past few months since we started Nefarious, because a lot of the passion that I had for podcasting, like, I've always loved it, but a lot of the passion kind of got beat out of me because I'm working 50 hours a week at the shoot job and trying to, you know, negotiate schedules and stuff for the podcast. It's just like, I was tired, man. But just being able to talk with my friends and people I respect and about politics and the world and pop culture and this movie, Brave New World. We've got not one but two podcasts about it. We've got a full review with myself, Jennifer Smith, Brittany Monet, and Andy Babacht. But then I was so inspired, Way, not only by the movie, which, again, it's not the greatest movie in the world. I give it a 7.5 out of 10. But just Sam Wilson and Anthony Mackie's portrayal of Sam Wilson. I was thinking at work all day, and this is part of the reason why I get in trouble at work, because I'm there. You know, you own my body, but you don't own my soul. Work, my soul is not for sale. And so I think about stuff for podcasts while I'm at work, and you know, we should reach out to this person. We should do this topic. And I was just like, I need to say something about Sam and what that character meant to me, because a lot of the reviews I've seen have been kind of lukewarm or negative. And it's, again, it's not the best movie in the world, but it's not what a lot of people are saying it is. And so I did like a 18-minute solo podcast, just giving a bit of Sam's backstory and why, to me, he is the perfect Captain America for this time, the America that we're currently living in. And so I hope people enjoyed it. Like, just stuff like this, man. Like, let's hear it for Captain America.
So again, just to clarify, what do people search for in their podcast platforms? Because you have recently rebranded from the Kings of Sport.
Yeah. So if you're, I believe if you're subscribed on like Spotify, it just automatically switched over. Okay. But if you're on Apple Podcasts or iHeartRadio, some of these other platforms, you may just have to search Nefarious Media Network, and then all of our backlog will pop up as well. But yeah, like Ray Williams has the spinning, used to be the Spinning Black Fist, now it's Styles Break Fights, because we didn't want to be so on the nose with the name, with him and Chinyere Okafor. John Pollock was their guest in January, which was a big thrill for Ray and Chi-Chi. And so, yeah, we've got plans. We've got plans to bring more people on. And yeah, it just feels weird. And I'm sure you and John maybe had similar thoughts when you started kind of building out Post Wrestling. It's just kind of like, this is really cool, but also, I don't know if I can do this, but we're going to try it.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, as Chris often says, man, like, we're building a plane while we've already taken off. And so we're just kind of, you know, working together to make this happen.
As I'm sure you've already found, you can't do it alone, and having, yeah, you know, a great network of people who I think are very talented certainly helps. So looking forward to what you got going on with Nefarious Media, including the NWA podcast, which is, of course, a Nefarious Media production, airing once a month here at Post Wrestling. Your next episode is Sunday, March the 16th. So in 2 weeks' time, you'll be back here with Chris. By that point, I'm sure taking the biggest victory lap of all.
Yes.
All right. Exhausted from jogging from those victory laps. And, of course, with Andrew Thompson and two-way Ray Williams.
Your cousin Ray.
My cousin Ray. Ray Ting.
Ray Ting.
Showing up, yeah.
Last plug. Mm-hmm. Last plug, I promise people. Besides checking me out on Blue Sky, Twitter still, and your usual spots on social, IG. Monday afternoon, early evening, we're going to have a edition of the Kings of Sport with myself, Chris, Ray, and a couple of the new people that we've invited onto the program, including a gentleman, Gerard Downtown Brown, that was in attendance tonight in Toronto.
Yeah.
And we're going to talk about Elimination Chamber and maybe some of the fallout from, you know, the audience's reaction to that closing segment. So if you enjoyed Way and I's conversation tonight, check us out Monday at the Nefarious Media YouTube. We'll post the links and everything, but I'm sure that conversation will be fun as well.
Looking forward to it. Thank you, everybody, for listening live in the YouTube. Also, thank you, everybody, listening after the fact on our free feeds. Please subscribe to any of those platforms wherever you choose to listen to it. And join the Post Wrestling Cafe if you happen to like what we do. So we'll be talking to you next week. Take care. Bye-bye.
This month at PostWrestlingCafe.com, go XL, and you get live editions of Rewind to Raw, Rewind to Dynamite, and Rewind to SmackDown, featuring all the news of the day, your questions and answers, as well as feedback. PostWrestlingCafe.com, $6 gets you in the door.